Hi, this is Matt Kinnear, and you're listening to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, brought to you by our presenting partner, Simplicity Group, featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, and Inside Lacrosse analysts. And my old Blue Jay buddy, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, there is an amazing schedule of games this weekend, some notable midweek games to recap, and sit down with our old friend, Matt Kinnear, Inside Lacrosse's editor-in-chief, get his thoughts on the start of the season and other newsworthy lacrosse topics. A lot to get to. Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, how you doing? You're out in Denver this week for work.
This is supposed to be an undisclosed location. You just gave it away. But yeah, work calls me out west. Been in Denver where it's been cold. There's snow on the ground now, just a couple of inches, which is no big deal for a city like Denver to get snow on the regular. But I understand there's snow back home, and things are shutting down or shut down.
Yes, the streak continues here in Central Maryland. No school today after about 4 inches of snow started in the evening and snowed into the early morning. I think this continues a streak of broken up school weeks since around Thanksgiving. I don't think there's been a full week of school because of either the weather or planned teacher days or holidays since Thanksgiving around that time. So, yeah, we're now in mid-February. And my kids just are off all the time. They're in my house all the time, it seems like. So it's good. It's good. It's good stuff. I appreciate you getting up early to do this. Dix, this weekend, we should finally see all teams in action for the first time in 2025. All of them have a dream to get to May Madness. And we have a deal for our fans. The men's and women's NCAA championship weekends are heading back to Gillette Stadium, held jointly for the first time since 2017. From May 23rd to May 26th, there is nowhere else in the lacrosse world to be than Foxborough, Massachusetts, for 8 of the best and most impactful games of the season. The action starts Friday with the women's D1 semifinals, continues on Saturday with the men's D1 semis, then championship action starts Sunday with men's D2, men's D3, and women's D1, culminating Monday afternoon on Memorial Day with the men's D1 final. This year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our loyal listeners, $5 off all single-day ticket options, men's and women's games, by using the code ILPOD, that's ILPOD, at checkout. So head to ncaa.com/laxtickets and enter ILPOD at checkout to purchase your tickets. You know you're going to be there on championship weekend, so why not get $5 off and help show the NCAA how awesome our D-Fly and Dixie listeners are by purchasing your tickets today using our promo code. Once again, that's ncaa.com/laxtickets, LAXTICKETS, laxtickets, and promo code ILPOD at checkout for $5 off your tickets.
It's a big deal to have the men's and women's championships together again. I was there in 17 when they were played, and it just brought an added energy, an added boom to the event. You know, that Sunday I was doing the Division II and III championship games for NCAA.com, and just the vibe in the stadium. It was Maryland. Now, granted, it was Boston College, so it had a local flavor to it, but it just added such a great layer of enthusiasm to the event. So I'm looking forward to seeing the men and women in the same location here in 2025.
Okay. Let's get to some action in the midweek. On Tuesday, there were three games. St. Bonaventure got a 9-8 win over Mount St. Mary's. Ohio State won 16-4 over Bellarmine. And Holy Cross got an in-state win, 14-9 over UMass Lowell. But really, the key game was on Monday when Towson traveled to Syracuse for a top 20 matchup. Cuse comes away with an 18-7 win. Towson kind of hung around through three quarters. It was 11-7 at the start of the fourth. And then Syracuse outscored the Tigers 7-0 in the fourth and ran away with it. All of the top guys for Syracuse had big games. Hiltz had 3 goals, 4 assists. Bolena, 2 goals, 4 assists. Leo Thompson, 3 goals each. Luke Roa had 4 goals. No surprises there, and real good production from the offense. What are your takeaways from that?
First of all, I want to talk about Luke Roa for a second. We talk about players taking a jump, and I think Roa is one of those guys who has exploded. He had that a potential goal of the year candidate tattooing a corner on the run left-handed. That was just terrific. And he and Michael Leo are two guys that you don't really talk about when you talk about Syracuse because, Spallina and Hiltz and Billy Dwan on the defensive end, and rightly so, but those are guys I think that have just really elevated their game. And this game reminded me a lot of the first round NCAA tournament contest in the Dome back last May when it was a tight contest and Syracuse went on a run just to put Towson away. A big win for Towson, a big win for Syracuse. Towson off to a rough start. But I think they're going to be okay. I like what I see out of the Tigers, but I do think they're missing some pieces from last year and still trying to figure it out. But a resounding dominant win for Syracuse, who's looked really, really good so far in the early season.
We are recording this early on Wednesday morning. The two-time defending champs, Fighting Irish, will be in action later tonight, and we'll recap that game when we're joined later by Matt Kinnear from Inside the
Yeah.
Call.
Yeah. I think everybody's excited to see Notre Dame. And that's one of the reasons. So, yeah, it's early here in Denver. I'm 2 hours ahead of you, or behind you, I should say. And I'm dragging. I went to a silent disco last night. You ever been to a silent disco, or do you know what a silent disco is?
Yeah, I have. It can be really fun.
It was great. It was awesome. And I went in the first time and was having a good time. And the person that, so it's the headphones that you put on, and the person that gave me their headphones when they were finished was like, "Oh, here's how you change the channel." But I couldn't figure that out, so I got tired of the music, went off to another section of the event, came back to the silent disco, and then I realized that some people's headphones were green, others were red, others were blue, and then I figured out how to change the channel, and from there it was a great night. The silent disco, man, that was cool.
Yeah, it can be fun. I've done it a couple of times, like on a, at a resort or on a cruise or something like that. I went to one time and they only had the headphones were working, or they were only playing one song. So everyone was listening to the same song. Like, what are we doing here? So I just like handed the headphones back.
Yeah.
This is dumb. What are we? This is not even cool. But yeah, that can be a lot of fun. And just to see
The
people.
first go round, I was getting frustrated because it was a lot of women anthems that were playing, like "I Will Survive" and what was the other one? There was another one that came. "You're the One That I Want" from Greece.
Yeah, what's wrong with those songs? Those are
They're
bangers.
not bad, but it's just like, I don't know, when they played a couple of old, more hip hop songs, and then on, because it was like an 80s, I guess that was like an 80s pop channel or 70s, 80s pop channel, and there were some, and I don't know, it just got tiresome. But then you would have been proud of me, man. I had almost the entire dance floor surrounding me and giving me props as I was new. I knew every single word to "Nothing But a G Thing" from Snoop and Dr. Dre. As I sung that, people were very impressed with the middle-aged white guy spitting
I expect nothing
fire.
less from you. The silent Dixie. I love it. I love it. Oh, that's great. Hey man, there are some awesome games this week. And like I said, a lot of everyone's in action. Finally, the Ivy League joins the fun this week. So let's get to the weekend previews. And they start on Friday night. There's a key game. Stony Brook's 1-0. They'll take on North Carolina, who's ranked number 13. Carolina had a great win last week. I think it surprised a lot of people of how well that they played against Michigan. This game's at 6 o'clock. Fans can catch it on the ACC Network X, so ACC Plus. The series of these two teams, this is the eighth meeting. UNC has won all of them, 7-0 all time against them. Last year, UNC won 12-8 at Stony Brook. Again, UNC coming off a really good first win. Wasn't an upset. They were favored to win the game, but I think most people were surprised how relatively easy the win was for UNC. Owen Duffy and Dom Petrimala played up to the expectations that people have for those two young players and led the way offensively. Their new goalie looked pretty good with 12 saves, gave up 6 goals, also had 6 ground balls. Stony Brook, they come into the game beating Rutgers 9-8. They're the first team receiving votes right outside the top 20. So they're on the verge of breaking through the top 20. And they were led by Carson Boyle and Tanner Williams in their outing against Rutgers. This is Stony Brook is could be sneaky good. This is an important game for both teams.
It is. And when you rewind a year ago, Carolina's season opener was in Atlanta, and it was an unimpressive win against Mercer and pretty much set the stage for a disappointing season in Chapel Hill. Complete role reversal with that big win over the two-time defending Big Ten champion Michigan Wolverines. And you mentioned Duffy Petromala had great games. The interesting subplot for this one, Nick Dupuy, who's running second midfield for North Carolina, is a Stony Brook transfer. And there's another transfer contributing to the University of Maryland from Stony Brook, Noah Armitage. So you kind of thought that Stony Brook was going to take a step back. But what do? They come right out of the gate and they beat Rutgers, who had upset Lehigh the week before. So that's a huge win for an America East team over a Big Ten team. And I think this game will be very important for Stony Brook's offense against North Carolina's defense, a young group that lost Peter Toman in their final preseason scrimmage against Delaware for the year to a lower body injury. So now you have a freshman and a sophomore in Colucci and Asheim starting down low for Carolina in that third spot, kind of a little bit of a rotation there. But the calming presence for Carolina is Mike G between the pipes. He's a guy who's come in. Was elected captain by his teammates. Pretty impressive when you consider he has only been there for a few months. So this game all of a sudden went from, okay, Friday night, Carolina kind of gets a breather, quote unquote, to it's on. It's going to be a great game in Chapel Hill on Friday evening.
For someone who's seen UNC play a lot more than I have, I particularly noticed their pressure, their 10-man ride, the pressure that they played on defense to cause a lot of turnovers by Michigan and failed clears. Is that something they do all the time, or do you think that was a game plan
I don't think it was
for Michigan?
anything special. I think it's something that, Owen Duffy rides like a banshee. He did in high school and he continues to do so at the collegiate level. So that's no surprise to me. And they pressure the middle of the field. One thing they're missing is they would bring Toman from the close D into the midfield to create havoc. So they've had to adjust there, but they didn't miss a beat against Michigan.
Yeah, this should be a great one. Again, it's Friday night, Valentine's Day. This is a date night type of game. Stony Brook at North Carolina at 6 o'clock on ACC Network Plus. Rolling into Saturday's game, Sticks. Rutgers, who we just talked about, coming off a 9-8 loss, an upset loss, really, to the Seawolves. They're 2-1. They'll travel up to West Point to take on number 12 ranked Army, who's undefeated 1-0. This game is at noon. You can catch it on ESPN Plus. These two teams have a long history. I think this is the 87th meeting between these te two teams, with Army leading the series with 61 wins in those 87 attempts. Last year, Army came into the game ranked number 6. Rutgers was number 11, and Army came away with a 16-7 win at SHI Stadium along the
On the banks
on the
in
banks.
Piscataway, New Jersey, on the
There you go.
banks.
This is a important game for each of these teams. Rutgers really needs this one.
They need a bounce back, big bounce back opportunity for the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, who said goodbye to Ross Scott, Shane Knobloch on the offensive end of the field. Colin Cordilla is a talented middie. I think he'll be the focal point of the Army defense. When you look defensively for Rutgers, though, the weapons that Army possesses Jackson Eichner and Evan Plunkett, his younger brother Hill Plunkett, who's did the prep year last year for Army, is now in West Point making plays. He's incredibly talented. So this is going to be a huge challenge for the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. And how about Army? They dominated UMass last week. A series that has always been defined by really close games. as has this one, with the exception of last year. So it'll be interesting to see if this one is a battle, or if Army can all once again kind of put their stamp on the game and establish dominance.
Yeah, and Army's win last week against UMass. This is on the road. They raced out to a 6-0 lead.
Yeah.
Will Colletti was great at the faceoffs, 15 of 23. How do you think Rutgers matches up at the faceoff dot?
Rutgers is going to have to figure out a way to neutralize Coletti, who's one of the best faceoff men in the country. And I was having a conversation recently with a couple of people, and when they're talking about the Patriot League in particular, and then the country as a whole, like Army, Army, Army. God, they had such a great year last year. I'm like, no, they didn't. They didn't. They didn't win the Patriot League, and they didn't make the NCAA tournament. So this is a pissed off Army team that is hungry in 2025. And the combination of talent and their motivation is powerful. And Rutgers is they're going to have their hands full this weekend.
Again, that is at noon. Fans can catch that on ESPN Plus. Another game that will be at high noon on ESPN Plus, the number 4 ranked Johns Hopkins Blue Jays travel to Loyola, right up the street, to take on the Greyhounds, who are a little desperate for a win. They come into the game 0-2. This is a series that Hopkins has historically dominated, but most of those meetings were early on. Loyola's won 6 of the last 10. Blue Jays do have a 1-game winning streak in here. They won last year 13-7. But this is always a fight. Again, as I mentioned, Greyhounds really need a win. Hopkins has a couple of few good top 20 wins under their belt, but they can't have a letdown in this rivalry game.
Yeah, pretty impressive that Hopkins is 3-0 right now, and there's some teams that haven't even played a game yet. And Hopkins, you mentioned it, wins over Denver, Towson, and this past weekend, a really, good Georgetown team, a team that's going to round into form as the season progresses. So the Blue Jays come in on a high note. Loyola lost a heartbreaker to Maryland in overtime, but they looked good. They rebounded from a tough loss to Georgetown, came out, used home cooking to their advantage. Ridley was really energetic. The atmosphere is absolutely fantastic. And the weather was not great. It was, 30, 35 degrees and, some sleet and very, very cold. But the Greyhound faithful showed up. And I expect a similar environment this weekend when Hopkins makes the short trip to Ridley. They're selling these really cool Battle of Charles Street t-shirts, both for the men's and the women's games, because I do believe the Loyola women play the Hopkins women as well. So it's a nice double header. When you look at the subplots of this thing, Luke Stout, starting goalie for Hopkins, transferred from Loyola, just made the short trip up Charles Street to leave Loyola behind and become a Blue Jay. So that's something to keep an eye on. And face-offs have continue to be a bugaboo for Loyola. Can they muck it up? Logan Callahan doing a really nice job for Johns Hopkins. But one person that you're really going to want to watch is Remy Reynolds, close defender for Loyola. He had, I talked about Luke Rowe's goal last year, maybe being a candidate for goal of the year. Reynolds, play of the year candidate, where he detwigged Maryland attackman, got the ball on the carpet, picked up the ground ball, went coast to coast and posted up from about 12 and put it past Logan McNaney. So that was an incredible play. So you got some really good players on display. You've got the series, the proximity. And look, these two schools, when it comes to the lacrosse field, they just don't like each other. They just don't. And it's going to be an entertaining afternoon at Ridley on Saturday.
And this game, always a good one, and it's available on ESPN Plus at noon. Surprisingly, Dix, another noon game that has a top 20 matchup in it. You can catch this on Flow Sports if you can find it.
Oh, you hate all the games being played at the same time, and I hate flow sports.
This will feature number 13 Penn at number 15, Georgetown. Again, it's at noon on Flow Sports. This is our first time seeing the Quakers this season as they make their 2025 debut. They were picked fourth in the Ivy preseason poll, but there's some high expectations in Philadelphia this season for the Quakers.
There is. And this is a team that is going to be built on defense in a conference that's being punctuated by offense and high octane. This is, Emmett Carroll, starting goaltender, Brendan Lavelle, considered to be one of the best, if not the best, close defenders in the country. So this is a Penn team, but they can also score goals. But they're not going to do it probably at the rate of a Cornell or a Princeton or even Yale. So, Penn. It's an Ivy League that is experienced and seasoned. You have a number of guys who didn't play in 2021 that are now in their quote unquote fifth year, although it doesn't count as a fifth year for the Ivy. But it's a very experienced league, a very explosive league, and we'll see what Penn looks like in this early season contest.
In this series last year, the Hoyas won 12-9, and they took a big lead, 5-0 lead against the Quakers and held them off. James Ball, faceoff guy for Georgetown last year, was the huge a big piece of that win, winning 17-24. But this year they got a new guy, Ross Prince, and he's won almost 70% of his faceoffs in the first inning. Is it their faceoff coach, Ted Moon, who is helping produce such great Hoya faceoff men?
I think it's absolutely appropriate to give all the props in the world to face-off coach Ted Moon. He is the Yoda of face-offs in college lacrosse. But it's not like they have a new guy in Prince. James Ball just hasn't played yet for whatever reason. I believe it's an injury, but not 100% sure. So keep our eye on his status. And much like Penn is built on the defense, so is Georgetown with Anderson Moore, their goaltender. And then you have Ty Banks, an impressive sophomore, both of them sophomores. Tominovich came back last week, a big boost for Georgetown, although it didn't really translate against a very powerful Johns Hopkins offense. So this will be a fun game and one that could be low scoring, but could be sneaky, both teams potentially double digits. We'll have to wait and see.
Again, you can catch that at noon on Flow Sports. Two more games to highlight, Dix, and they're both really big games. Top 10 matchups. Number 5, Princeton in action again for the first time this season as they join their Ivy League counterparts. They'll go to Penn State to take on the Nittany Lions, who are 2-0. This game's at 1 o'clock. You can catch it on Big Ten Plus. These two teams don't play that often. The last meeting was in the NCAA tournament in 2023. Penn State knocked off Princeton 13-12. This is going to be a good game.
Big time, and maybe a preview of another NCAA tournament game later in the year. Hopes are high in Princeton, young offense, Nate Kibiri. But you also have Mackesy, the elder statesman. They're going to be facing off well. And this is a Princeton team that is loaded. And Penn State, though, they've had a good start to their 2025 campaign. Impressive win over Colgate. Then they dusted Villanova this past weekend, a game that was very similar to the Towson-Syracuse game, tight, and then the Nittany Lions used a run to establish that distance between them and the Wildcats. Matt Traynor getting it done on the offensive end of the field, and when you look at this game defensively, how does Penn State match up? Does Ross take Kibiri? I think he might. Alex Ross is the top defender for Penn State. And I think he'll take Kibiri, who's the biggest dodging threat. And then, Mackesy, great shooter. Burns is a distributor. So it'll be interesting to see how Penn State elects to match up on Princeton. Face-offs will be huge in this game. As Princeton, Penn State will be a little bit more methodical. I'm expecting, we haven't seen Princeton yet, but I'm expecting them to go full gas. Their last scrimmage was this past weekend. They played UMBC. Yeah, this is one that's, if you get access to Big Ten Plus, you're going to want to check this one out.
1 o'clock on Big Ten Plus. And finally, our last game of the weekend. This is a huge one. Number 2, Syracuse comes down to Maryland to take on the Terps, who are ranked number 6. This is a 2 o'clock on Big Ten Plus. These teams have a very good history. And Maryland has won the last 6, including a thriller in the Dome last year, 13-12 in overtime.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that game won inside lacrosse game of the year, according to the fans. It was epic. It was terrific. And I expect a really good game this coming weekend as well. We've already talked about Syracuse. We know the pieces. We know what they're bringing to College Park. Maryland, a gutty win over Loyola last weekend. Loyola had the crowd, they had a lead. And then Eric Spanos decided to put his stamp on the game and really made some terrific plays down the stretch. They're facing off pretty well, the Terrapins are, but this will be a different breed that they're taking on in Syracuse. I think it's probably the most athletic and the most talented faceoff group that they will have faced up to this point. And this is definitely the most prolific offense that they'll be going against. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle that. Logan McNaney is the starter once again. He's wearing the number one, which makes sense simply because, he's won a national championship. He is an All-American. He's won conference championships. He looks a lot better than he did this time last year when he was coming off of that ACL injury. So one thing Loyola was able to do against Maryland was win one-on-one matchups against their poles, including the game tying goal with 6 seconds left in regulation. How will Maryland's close defense handle that attack unit, that offense for Syracuse?
Yeah, this is a game that I'm actually pretty excited for. And I'll be catching it at 2 o'clock, Big Ten Network Plus. As I mentioned, Dix, great slate of games. Plan your, if you have errands to run, do it in the morning or late in the afternoon on Saturday, because you're going to want to be sitting in front of your TV in the middle of the day watching your favorite teams play. Lots of great action. So make your plan now. Dix, let's bring in our old friend, IL Editor in Chief, Matt Kinnear, talk about his thoughts on the beginning of the 2025 season. Matt, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Dan, thanks for having me. It's great to, it's only 2 weekends in, but it's been a lot that's happened so far, so I'm eager to talk about it.
Yeah, I think this is a great forum for you to give your voice a little bit about the early season. Let's start. Wednesday night, Notre Dame played Cleveland State. It was our first time seeing the back-to-back defending champs in 2025.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, kind of going back even more, like, I don't think there should be any real doubt that Notre Dame is the preseason number one. When we go into what they've done over the past 2 years and their ability to kind of the way that they built depth over the past few years, it was just phenomenal. You saw those midfield lines just keep running and running and running in the national championship game and semifinals last year. But looking at last night's game against Cleveland State, it's everything you want to see from a debut, from a dominant team. Playing a team that they're going to beat up on pretty good, right? They didn't. They got a lot of guys in. They showed some new faces. I don't think they didn't take their foot off the gas, so to speak. They went out there and they did the things that you need to do to prepare for a game. You don't look down on any opponent. Jake Taylor's 7 goals is something that's huge. The way that he moves off ball, deservedly so. Chris Kavanaugh is getting, the Tuorton buzz, but I mean, Jake Taylor could have 1 million goals this year and be the front runner for the Tuorton Award. I know that might sound like a bold statement, but he is that good. And Notre Dame, when he is in the lineup, they win. When he is not in the lineup, they struggle more. So I think there's a very clear source of his value. I think Brady Picorni making his debut, he had that super nice fake and skip to the midfield. That was really nice to see. Brock Bearman getting a lot of run. And then the thing that I really liked was Ben Ramsey had this hit just above GLE, that was like, all right, these guys came to play. They weren't taking the day off because they were playing Cleveland State. And I think that's really the mark, of what a championship program does, is they don't take a day off, even though they know that they're going to win this game just because of their ability. So that's really everything you like to see from the defending champs in game one. And obviously, it's going to ramp up pretty quickly. They got Marquette this weekend, and then Georgetown is just a few weeks away here.
We talked a little bit about the defending champs. After 2 weeks of action, what are some of the things you were looking forward and looking to see in the early season games, and how much of that has been true, or are there any surprises that you've seen after a couple of weeks of play?
Yeah, there's with a year like this where you have such a monumental class of people graduate, people are going to be tired of us talking about them still. Brennan O'Neill and Connor Schellenberger and Ajax Apetela and stuff like that. Who are the programs that have seemingly done the best job of bringing up, those guys behind their star players that graduated, or bringing in new freshmen? So I'm really like an eye towards some freshmen, and you saw some great freshman performances. Bennett Palmer from Delaware the other day, he had that game-winning goal, and he had quite a day there as well. And which of these teams that have just been the best at, continuing to develop players that are not just their star players? And I think that's like when you see a tremendous group graduate, that's what you need. And look at Virginia as a program that, Connor Schellenberger is, I mean, arguably the best Virginia Cavalier of all time. And that's a pretty bold statement given all the people that have come through there. And, we've only seen one game from them, and, it was kind of true to the way that they play. They played up and down versus Colgate. But that's kind of what I'm looking for, are like, all right, they graduate some tremendous players. How well have they been doing making sure that there's a next man up? And obviously, in that case, McCabe Millen, who probably honestly hasn't gotten enough attention since he's been in college, for the way that he's playing and, the role that he's stepping into, and the way that he's prepared for it. So that's kind of the things that I'm looking for. But what I've, if you're asking me what a storyline so far is, I think that Syracuse's 3-0 start really has to be, something that you look at. And obviously, Johns Hopkins, their start to, beating all these top 20 teams. We had the cover of the Faceoff yearbook, not this year, but last year, had both of those teams on it with the word back. And maybe we were just a year too early. But the way that Syracuse is doing it, just their offense seems overwhelming. Their defense is definitely stepping up in the right time. I still think that we're not quite certain about them in net. That has to be tested some more against some, better opponents. But, the way that they kind of dismantled Towson at the end of that game was really something. And Johns Hopkins probably has a better ability to win ugly. At least that's been proven so far since they've played a higher level of competition. So really, these traditional powers and how well they've started and come out of the gates is certainly an early season storyline.
You mentioned a amazing class of seniors, grad students who have left the college game in 2024. And as we move into 2025, one player who is back, who is a superstar, is CJ Kirst. You have a piece out this week about CJ when you talk to the rest of the Kirst brothers. Give me some background on that story and your thoughts on CJ as he enters his senior season.
Yeah, it's funny because, we get into the problem where these guys are good for 4 years, sometimes 5 years, and we talk about them for 4 years, sometimes 5 years, and it's tough to do anything new. Their stories have been told. People have seen them play a million times. CJ Kirst certainly falls into that category of a guy that's been discussed so much, and his play like really just speaks for itself. But I wanted to kind of take a look, and it fit a theme a little bit with the Cavanaughs, but the curse and, all the brothers, and I wanted to get their point of view of like what their, for most of them, their little brother, and then they have the youngest is at Rutgers right now. What they have seen from him that maybe we don't see as kind of the fans of college lacrosse. And, the thing that stood out, number one, is just competitiveness. He's the guy when they were playing basketball in the backyard, even though he was smaller, wouldn't stop fighting and would beat his older brothers and wouldn't stop and would annoy the heck out of them in the process of doing it. And then just, there's a certain like infectious personality that, from everything that I've heard comes from his dad in terms of the way that he loves the game, but he does all of the things to be a great leader and teammate. It's a very positive led approach. He's gonna, one of the things that one of his brothers, and I forget which one, said to me is the way that he brings people in to his circle is something that's really incredible. And I think that's the thing that makes a great team is when your great players aren't just great players. They are people who bring everyone else along with them and raise the level of play. So, if we see CJ at Cornell this year, bringing everyone up to his level, that's going to be a dangerous, dangerous offense. We'll see how their defense holds up because I think that's certainly a question mark across the whole Ivy League outside of Penn in terms of these great offenses. But will the defenses be good enough? But man, Cornell is going to be fun to watch. And the curse, that family, their mom Michelle, they're just incredible people. And they are great ambassadors for the sport of lacrosse and a great family, and just really kind of shows like what a great support system can do for a young man.
We get to see CJ and the Big Red in action for the first time this week, and they'll join their Ivy League counterparts getting out, making their debuts in 2025. This is a cool big weekend of lacrosse. What are you most excited to see this weekend?
So I'll be going down to College Park, which is my alma mater, but I'll be doing the doubleheader, the women's game, Maryland versus Syracuse, and then the men's game, Maryland versus Syracuse. And I want to see the Syracuse offense in person. I've seen Maryland. I covered their game against Richmond. And I think that, Maryland, to me, this game strikes me as like these teams are what we've known them to be for most of their existence, right? Maryland's a team that is going to maybe out game plan you. Syracuse is a team that's going to overwhelm you. And I'm just curious to see what happens when, that gets on a field together. How explosive is that going to be? So really looking forward to covering that game. Penn State Princeton is a game that I'm going to keep my eye on. I've already kind of arranged the film and to talk to some people after that game. I really like Penn State's fight. I was at the Villanova game this past weekend. I don't think they're going to blow teams out. I think they're going to be in every game with a chance to win it. And they have the mentality that they will be able to close out those games. They'll be able to claw back from 2 goals down. Trainer is one of those guys who's extremely confident and, will be able to kind of shoot himself out of a hole if they're into it. So don't count Penn State out of any game. But I am curious when they have a more explosive team like Princeton ahead of them, just how they line up with that. Albany Colgate, that game got moved to Friday because of the weather, but that's just going to be a fun one. Those teams like to play up tempo. They like to do some peculiar stuff, Colgate with the ride and just the way that they, kind of play up and down. That'll be a fun one. And then I'm also planning to cover Navy in Towson on Sunday. That's going to be at the Naval Academy. That's just a really good measuring stick game. I don't think we know how good Navy is yet. They're 2-0, but they haven't played a great game yet. Towson is kind of the opposite, right? Where they've played 2 games where they're kind of a middleweight fighting a heavyweight, and they've hung in there at least the whole game against Hopkins and through 3 quarters against Towson. But where are they, when they're kind of playing someone on their level, someone in their weight class? And then a game that I don't think people really quite have on their radar is Providence versus Harvard. And those are two top 20 teams right now. And Harvard's got Sam King, who's kind of on the short list of one of the best attackmen in the country. But the guy that maybe people need to be talking more about is Ryan Bell. He's like kind of one of those, like him and Richie Joseph, it's the best 1-2 punch going right now. Bell, his ability to kind of like assertively find these feeds that other people just can't make, is really exciting to watch. So I think it'll be fun to have him kind of on a bigger stage against a bigger opponent and see what he can do.
Yeah, lots of great games this weekend. And I know our listeners are really excited. You are the editor in chief of Inside Lacrosse, and you have been in that role for a decade, right? So when you approach the season, you probably start in the fall with the editorial staff thinking about putting together the face-off yearbook, overall themes for a season. And then you start working on like your coverage plan and who's going to do what stories. Can you describe to the listeners what that process looks of compiling all this information in terms of schedules, rosters, putting together a product like the Face-Off Yearbook, and in the context of planning out for the next lacrosse season?
I mean, you kind of just wake up and it's June is really what happens. It moves, it moves so fast, and it happens just, every week there's a new slate, every week there's a new storyline, every day there's a new thing. So part of it is a Herculean effort. When you come to the week to week of, well, let's step back to the face-off yearbook. You kind of we gather together, we talk a few times a week, as an editorial team, but generally, sometime in the fall, we'll have a big meeting, which will be the giant brainstorm where everyone comes together with multiple ideas of like not only who they think are like the best players, but just like what are the overall themes of the year. And this year, certainly Kirsten Cavanaugh taking the reins as that next, the next big names for the sport certainly rose to that. And in women's, it was, Michigan's rise was what we want with the cover story. But essentially the idea there being like, is there another team that's going to take that next step of to kind of join the BCs and the Northwesterns and whatnot. And then the good thing about being in this role for so long is just, I know all these guys, the coaches, and I'll get text messages of interesting stories and storylines that like we kind of can shape into our coverage. And then when it comes to the season, there's a Herculean effort just to get the Patrick McEwen, our data guy. First of all, everything goes to him because, it's a Herculean effort to get the scoreboard buzzing the way that it is. I don't think people realize the number of hours and just how much, there's a lot of automated processes, but just how much hands-on stuff needs to be done to have that going basically every night of the week, every day of the week. Men's D1 through D3, women's D1 through D3. So that's an enormous undertaking that we need to kind of work into our schedules as everyone, is kind of contributing there. But then, the thing that I want to make sure that we do, so between myself, guys like Terry, Kevin, Dan Ayburn, Dan Kaplan, and our freelance crew, is making sure that we get eyes on as much as possible, but that we're also kind of rotating who that we see. I don't love the fact that this is my second time covering Maryland so early in the season. That's how the schedule worked out. But I want to make sure that Terry gets to cover a Maryland game. I want to make sure Kevin gets to cover a Maryland game. We all kind of have our maybe home bases. I shift more towards the Philly teams just because I'm north of Baltimore and it's a little easier for me to get to. But really, that's kind of the big puzzle piece is, we know we're all going to go somewhere. We want to make sure that we're seeing not only the games that are the biggest storylines of the week. Obviously Maryland Syracuse this weekend is probably game number one, but make sure we're diversifying what we see so that we kind of canvas the landscape of college lacrosse in the best way. I know next week Terry's going up to New England. He's going to cover a bunch of games. I think he's going to see Boston U. He's going to see Fairfield. He's going to see Harvard. I think Dartmouth. I'm sure there's some more in there, but over the course of a few days. So really it's a matter of like, how can we best canvas college lacrosse in the best way using all of our resources? And then each week we kind of get together on Monday. We've been putting out the video where we kind of react to the weekend on lacrosse, and then we do it all again. And we do it for about 15 weeks. And then it's recruiting, and that doesn't stop either.
Great answer. Thanks for sharing that. One other story that I'm sure I'll be covering is this weekend is the PLL Championship Series and the launch and debut of the WLL. I watched the game with my family and it was a great product. It was fun to watch, and my wife, who coaches women's girls lacrosse club team, and my daughter watched, and it was fun to see the stars of the game out there. How big is that for the sport of lacrosse?
There needs to be a viable women's pro league. There's been different iterations that have kind of come and gone. Athletes Unlimited provided something that was unique, and I think that it was exciting for a little bit, but I don't think it had necessarily like the team sport element that you see with a more I don't know if traditional is the right word, but a more traditional kind of league. I'm hoping that the WLL can provide that because I think that what makes sports great is this aspect of it's a group of people coming together for something bigger than themselves. I've loved what I've seen of the WLL format in terms of them using the sixes style game. I think it translates a little bit better to women's lacrosse than it does to men's lacrosse. I think it's important that people see it played at a high level because for all the people who are maybe critics of it in terms of that being, what's going to be used in the Olympics, I don't think there's enough evidence of it being played by the best players in the world yet. So I'm glad that we're getting to see that with the WLL and the PLL Championship Series going on, because it's only going to get better as the best players in the world continue to play it. But in terms of the WLL and the future of women's lacrosse, I'm pumped that the PLL has branched into this because we've seen it over and over, and we have our data and analytics, and we've just anecdotally over the course of all my time being here, more people are getting attached to the women's game right now. There are so many young girls that are playing the game. The growth number for young girls and the growth for young boys, I think it's girls who are kind of really the engine of growing the sport. So having these great players be visible for 8 years, 10 years, as opposed to just these 4 years while they're in college, is tremendously important to keep growing the game. And seeing someone like Kylie O'Miller who's battled injuries, hurt to be able to come back and play, on the ESPN app and, have a great game at the pro level. I think I called her when she graduated her last game. They played against Maryland, and I think I wrote something that called her like the next face of women's lacrosse or something like that. She's battled injuries, so that maybe hasn't panned out the way she wanted. But like now, she's getting that chance to extend her career and be that person for young girls who adore her. It's awesome. So hope it works out. I'm eager to see what they do. I don't have any like inside info about what the next iteration of women's lacrosse league is. If it's going to be kind of sixes style going forward, or if they're going to play a more traditional style or a full season. But whatever it is, having the backing of the PLS platform and all the media that they put out attached to it, it's going to be huge for the growth of the game.
All right, a few quick hitters before we wrap up here. You ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
You go everywhere and anywhere to follow college lacrosse. You are a junkie and it's your job. So it's a perfect relationship there. What's your favorite place to watch a game?
Oh, that's tough. I'll give a few answers, not because I'm avoiding the question, but just because I'm trying to think through it. There's nothing like the Carrier Dome. It's an experience that, like, something about being indoors, it reminds me of like going to a minor league hockey game. In my case, back in the day, it's like watching the Baltimore Skipjacks play like the Adirondack Rangers or something like that. It's just like a vibe that is just like, if someone who like grew up watching arena sports, that you can't really match. Albany is one of the greatest, just the way that they've engaged the crowd. I was up there when they beat North Carolina in the first round of the NCAA tournament, pouring down rain, dude shotgunning beers in the tailgate outside, packed crowd. That's like one of the places for best atmosphere. A sneaky one that maybe people might not think of, Marist Stadium, Tenney Stadium. I went there for when they won the MAC championship years ago. God, I don't even know, remember when, but just a really cool, intimate vibe. All the students, jumped out into the field, and that was a really cool spot to see a game. So, God, I can keep going on because there's just so many good. Obviously, Homewood has its charm for just the buildings in the background. It's very old Baltimore. Man, there's a million places. The place that I will say this, the place I've never covered a game that I need to go cover a game. And it's funny because I'll have to put this list out on Twitter. Terry and I did it. And I don't remember how many stadiums I've been to. It was something around 38, I want to say, that I've been to and covered a game. And the one that really stuck out like a sore thumb that I have never covered a game at was Denver. I've been there. I've been in Bill Tierney's office at the University of Denver,
Okay.
but I've never actually covered a game. It was in fall that I went there. So I need to get out there in the spring and, see some sort of big time, maybe Denver, Georgetown, or Denver, Villanova, something like that. That's the place that's missing, like a. I can't believe I haven't been there because you look at those pictures that like basically every week they're selling that place out. It is the lacrosse capital of the West, as we called it, I want to say 15, 20 years ago. It's pretty criminal that I haven't been there yet.
Who's got the best press box?
The best press box. Loyola is really good. And Ryan is one of the best too in terms of SIDs. So that helps too.
Who has the best catering or meals for the media?
That's probably Loyola as well. They usually have Chick-fil-A there. And honestly, it's rare that there actually is food in most of the press boxes. I would say it's probably once or twice a year you get it. You'll get it like in the NCAA tournament. But Loyola is pretty consistent about it. So I've been to, I want to say, four games so far that I've covered in person, and I've been fed 0 times. I just bring jerky. That's my I just live on jerky and Dunkin' Donuts coffee for about 4 months.
All right, after 2 weeks, who's in your final four?
Notre Dame. Then I'm gonna say Virginia. Kind of going back to what I said about Millen earlier, I feel like Virginia has proven that it can maintain it year over year despite personnel losses. Syracuse. And I'm going to go Syracuse and Johns Hopkins. I know it's not very exciting. I mean, it's exciting, but I know it's not very bold in my prediction. But actually, you know what? Give me one of the Ivies in there. I've been voting Princeton number two. And so,
So Notre Dame, Virginia, Syracuse, Princeton.
and Princeton,
It's a lot of
Princeton.
orange. It's a lot of orange at the bottom.
But
All right. I know
we
you
haven't seen them
love.
yet. That's the problem. We haven't seen the Ivies yet. I wish there was a more universal start date for
That's
men's
okay.
lacrosse,
These are
but I'll digress.
quick hitter after week two. All right. I know you love going to Philly to cover games. What's the best burger place in Philadelphia?
Oh, and you've been there with me. Village Whiskey. The place is awesome. They have got like Thousand Island dressing on it and some cheddar. And then you get like a Yards Pale Ale that goes with it. Village Whiskey is the best burger ever. I have covered games in Philly with the sole intention of going 2 hours early so I could get a burger.
We've talked about this before. I love it. I love that that's still your favorite spot too. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. What are you listening to these days?
Well, obviously, Dan and I share our love of Pearl Jam. So, but this week I've been on a huge Primus kick.
All right.
Sticking to the, I haven't left the mid-90s.
You know what I've been listening to a lot is the Red Clay Strays since
Okay.
maybe like October or November. And even during, usually I turn everything off after Thanksgiving and just listen to holiday music. I couldn't. I was still like getting the Red Clay Strays in there during holiday time. Give them a
Oh,
listen. Love them.
I got another good one. So I picked up at Walmart. They have like greatest hit CDs that are like $4 or whatever. Possibly the greatest hit CD is Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band.
Oh, I love that one. That is a great
It's like
album.
15 tracks, every single one of them.
It's great.
It's just I've had it in my car. I think before most games that I've been covering this year, I've listened to Seger on the way there.
You know, there's another band that's in that category, like the Pretenders. Listen to
Okay.
the Pretenders' greatest hit CD. It's banger after banger, and it's like Bob Seger. It's like you don't usually think of them,
Yeah.
but you start listening to it, and you're like, every song is good. All right, what's your favorite Pearl Jam album?
Yield.
Okay, been listening to a lot of Yield and No Code lately. Best Pearl Jam show you've ever seen?
Best Pearl Jam has to probably be, and this is going to be a sore one for you because you did not go to it, but in Philly when they played 10, front to back, that was 2016, I
Yeah,
think.
they had back-to-back
And
shows. I went to the one that was on Thursday night, maybe, and then I think on Friday night, which I was offered a ticket to, and I said no, I can't go. And they played 10 for the first time, and
And well,
that was huge.
the great thing about that is if you look back at that show, look at what they played after 10 was like they just did they didn't there was no drop off. I think they came out with Breaker Fall right after that, which is, a deeper cut that others might know from binaural. But that was an awesome show from beginning to end. And I was actually behind the stage for that one, which was, I don't love the behind the stage view, but it was cool for that because when they started playing live and everyone knew that 10 was being played, just you could just see the entire crowd erupt. And I basically could see, the entire 15,000 people or whatever it is in Wells Fargo Center from my view. So that was awesome.
All right, last question. Over under on Orioles wins this season. Think they can eclipse 91 wins like they had last year.
Yes, I think that people might be unnecessarily down on the Orioles because of a, lack of offseason moves. I'm in the camp that this year is not the year to make the moves. It's next year. And this year we see how the young talent develops. And we've got so many great players that if they get reps, I think we're going to be looking at a 100-win season.
Nice. I love it. Yeah, the pitching staff, we just needed them to get healthy. So many
Yeah.
guys got hurt last year, and they'll come back at some point this season. So buying pitching, spending a lot of money for long-term contracts on pitching might not have been the best decision. They didn't
And
do that.
the market's really messed up right now with pitching,
Yeah,
I feel like.
I agree, Matt. I think the Orioles can eclipse that 91 wins from last year. Matt Kinnear, thank you so much for joining us on the DFly and Dixie podcast. You're welcome back anytime.
Thanks, Dan.
Welcome back to the DFly Dixie podcast presented by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. All right, Dixie, it's time for the give and go. Valentine's Day, Friday night. Most people are probably listening to this on Friday morning, Friday afternoon, or heading, they're thinking about their game this weekend, but they're also thinking about their sweetheart. I've talked about them all the time. I have a third grader and a fifth grader, and they are planning, they're doing their like the little Valentine's for their school party on Friday. It's come a long way since our days when we were doing this. And I want to get an older dad like you, who your kids are in college now. I want to know like what it was
Excuse me, an older
like.
dad? An older dad? Dude,
I mean,
you
like your children are older. I want to know what it was like 10 or 15 years ago when your kids might have been doing like the Valentine's, if they had that. Because I just remember like terrible little paper Valentines, and you had to give them to every kid. Or actually, when we did it, I don't even think you had to give it to every kid. You could just kind of give it to your friends. But they were all maybe Disney themed or something. They weren't great, but what you could get back when we were kids. And then the candy. Oh, you had the chocolates, heart-shaped chocolate boxes. And then the only other thing you had were those chalky little hearts that came in different colors that had like in red print, it would say like be mine or something else. And that's it. And that we thought that was like revolutionary. Like, look, there's actually these little candies with something written on it. Now my kids, Bennett has these really cool sports theme things that have these temporary tattoos with like a football or a basketball on them. And then each one is accompanied by like a little Fun Dip packet, which they're not even allowed to give out in school. But my wife, she keeps saying like, we know it's not allowed, but we're going to do it anyway because everyone does it anyway. And you know, my rule following daughter, who's the safety captain at her school, is like, Mom, we're not doing this. I'm not doing this. I'm not breaking the rules. And Bennett's like, can I just eat the Fun Dip right now and not give it to my friends? I just want to get your thoughts on Valentine's Day of yesteryear in the Dixie's household.
So you're talking about when I was growing up or when my kids were growing up?
Both. Both. I just gave you back when I was a kid and what my kids are going through.
Yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, you could be a real pal and send me one of those D-Fly Dixie podcast hats you have for Valentine's Day, and I would be yours. I've yet to receive my beautiful cap, great swag. But thinking back to grade school, Valentine's Day. God, I gotta put my thinking cap on. It's never that big of a deal, but similar, like, little cards, cheap, those chalky hearts. How nasty were they? I
Gross.
think, yeah. And I think we also used to have or get the heart-shaped red lollipops. I think we would, I think we would have those, but I honestly, like, everything these days is a big friggin' deal. Like, I mean, if we did anything, it was maybe somebody's mom, baked cupcakes or something, or maybe our teacher baked cupcakes. Now it's gluten-free and peanut-free and everything else free, and it can't be offensive and all that other kind of stuff. But my kids, honestly, I think my wife handled most, if not all, of
Oh,
the
I'm sure.
part. Yeah, so I don't even know what was going on with Valentine's Day. And so, but again, you would get the notice from the school, if you're sending in any Valentine's Day treats, please do not have it contain any of the following.
Yeah.
And the thing was a page long of what you couldn't bring in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think my wife may have made cookies or something like that for the kids to take in. But my kids, I don't think they really even treated Valentine's Day that big a deal. Like,
I mean, they're young
they're
boys. They probably didn't. It probably wasn't a big deal. They send home in Howard County, Maryland, they send home a sheet 2 weeks in advance, maybe 3 weeks in advance of every kid in the class. So first and last name, every kid. So that you can't forget anybody. And you know the correct spelling of everyone. And then each class has a party that the PTA sort of gets involved in. And there are specific rules of what they can and can't do. For other things like Halloween, they sort of banned kids coming to school in costumes. So now they have like a trunk or treat, or my school does. So it's after school on like the Friday before Halloween, and it's a PTA run after school. It's actually pretty cool. But they're not supposed to wear costumes in the school and the Halloween party. It's you'll get like a message from the principal. It says, "This is what we will be serving." It'll be like pretzels, you know. It's just a list of the, and they have to spell out exactly what's in every thing. Like you can't just on if your kid's having a birthday party, mom used to just send like 2 dozen cupcakes to the school, and every kid got can't do that now.
No, not at all. No,
Can't do
no.
that at all. They're not even supposed to share food at school.
I think also growing up, you could give a Valentine to who you wanted to. In other words, you didn't have to give it to, if you had beef with somebody, you didn't have to give them a Valentine. But I do believe my kids, if they did give Valentines, they had to give it to everybody in the class. No child left behind when it comes to Valentines. That's kind of weird. I mean, I get it, but at the same time, it's like, but you don't want, if there's a person that isn't particularly popular or whatever, you don't want them to feel bad and left out,
Yeah, of course not. It's a day of love. Peace and love. Peace and love.
And I'm sure, please do not send me any Valentines. They will go directly into the trash. I say, I'm too busy to receive your Valentines. I say that with peace and love, peace and love. Good old Ringo
Good
Starr.
old Ringo.
But yeah, it's and I guess probably kids, especially little punks will stack their Valentines and like, look, I got 20 Valentines. How many do you get? I could totally see that. How are the not never having girls? I kind of know the answer to this question, but how mean are the girls these days? Like you have a fifth grade daughter.
Oh
How
man.
bad are the girls?
I think it changes next year when they go to middle school. Because right
Okay.
now, it's again, I'm trying to wring out all of the enjoyment and get as much out of one, my kids being in the same school for the last time for a while, but also sort of the innocence and security of our little neighborhood public elementary school before they go
Right.
off to middle school. And it really changes. Like the parents in my neighborhood say, well, it's just different. It's just really different. There's certainly, I mean, I see the with the girls in particular. So I coach my daughter's basketball team, and there's five of the girls from like her fifth grade class or who are on the team, and then there's some girls from other schools. But they really get along really well. They're actually incredibly sweet, and there's a huge group of girls. So not just like some of the ones who are on my team, but there's an expanded network of fifth grade girls that are really tight and close, and it's kind of cool to see, actually. So,
Great. So it's not just athletes. Your daughter's also friends with NARPs.
oh yeah, definitely, definitely. There was this one girl. Oh my God, who's on her friend? Who one of her friends who wanted to be on my basketball? Her mom wanted me to coach her daughter, and I was like, can only take, eight or nine kids, right? And I already had.
I can only stack my team so much, Mrs.
She's pretty good, but
McStuddy.
I saw her getting ready. We played, and then her team was coming on after ours, and she's warming up, and she's got on green velour pants that look like pajamas, looked like something Janis Joplin or Lenny Kravitz would wear. She had a tie-dye
Mom or the
shirt under
kid?
her like reversible penny that everyone in the league gets. She had on, and then she had like a bandana do-rag on top of her hair that was also like tie-dye. I'm glad that girl's not on my team.
That wouldn't have gone on. That wouldn't have flown on Coach Flynn's squad. You
No,
couldn't. You couldn't deal with the female version of Dennis Rodman.
I mean, there's kids like I didn't have to say like I have girls who can play, or maybe there's peer pressure. They all wear like matching like black shorts, and they have like the reversible
Course.
stuff. But there's always kids in this like league from like it starts at seven and goes to at least to like the 10-year league where there's like a boy or girl wearing sweatpants or a little girl wearing leggings in a game, and you're like, come on, like don't can't their parents just look and see what the good kids are wearing and say like I'm gonna put my daughter in a pair of shorts. Because, that's what basketball players wear. Or my little special little guy who's not good at basketball. Why, how does he doesn't look different than the other kids on the court, not because he's not a great player, but because he's wearing pants. and all the other good kids are wearing shorts. And maybe you can just move around a little, like with a little more freedom when you don't have jeans on during a basketball game. You're like, can't you see the difference? Like, come on, parents. Like,
Yeah.
it's flat out
Well,
embarrassing.
so I have a okay. My two of my parent philosophies: teach them the word no early, and you don't ask, you tell. So, and I tell you what, I don't see it much or didn't see it much when my kids were coming up. But man, if you ever had the kid that had the shorts over top of sweatpants, yeah, you were taking him right to the rack, right to the rack.
No doubt. Hey, the last question for you. You're in Denver. Will you be home for Valentine's Day? Do you have plans?
Oh my God. Yeah. So I'll get home late Thursday night. Then we have an early morning flight to Raleigh Durham to watch Carolina Stony Brook on Friday night. So that'll be our Valentine's Day. And then early morning Saturday, another flight back to Baltimore to catch the Battle of Charles Street, Loyola and Hopkins.
Wow.
So it's a whirlwind week.
I love it. I love it. That seems like a good place to stop. A reminder that the DFly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by Simplicity Group. Simplicity Group is a leading financial products distribution firm that specializes in providing best-in-class insurance, investment, and business development solutions. To learn more, visit simplicitygroup.com. Dix and I will be here all season long. If you like what you heard, hit subscribe so you get this every week. Tell a friend. Share the love with them. You got a lacrosse friend in your life? Send this for the Valentine's Day. It's free, helps us out, and it helps spread the good word. We love to hear from you. Feel free to email us at dflyanddixie@gmail.com or find us on Twitter and Instagram at dflyanddixie. Thanks for listening, and as always, enjoy the games.